My performance review started with Michael asking me what my hopes and dreams were, and it ended with him telling me he could bench press 190 pounds.
Coaches, welcome to the Talking Split podcast once again. I'm Rob Calder, joined by Zoe Carr, Nick Mihai. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It is performance review season, which reminds me, Nick, we do have to schedule yours. Now that you've passed probation, we actually have to do some performance reviewing of how it's all going. But congratulations on the passing probation.
Thank you.
We skimmed over that.
Yeah, we have. We really skipped over that, didn't we? But it never ends, though, doesn't it? It's
like not at all.
Yeah, congratulations. Your performance review is.
Yeah, it's how it feels. So, and the topic we're going to get into today is mid-season reviews of your teams and how to make sure that everyone's still tracking along well and keeping everyone happy. But before we get into this, obviously, you can follow along on the Talking Split social media accounts on YouTube, on Instagram, on X. The podcast will go up every week. The drill will drop every week, all those sorts of things. So if you can like, share, subscribe, follow along and do all those sorts of things, you can obviously listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. If you have any coach shout-outs, by all means, send them through. If you have any topics of conversation that you would like to cover off, by all means, just slide into the DM, send us an email, anything along those lines, and we'll get researching on it. One of the topics we do have coming up, and it's been a little while since we first discussed this and we've come back to it, so, you know, the standard great ideas, limited follow-through that we have had potential to do in the past is Coach Wellbeing Month. So we have decided on a month. This took us 3 months to get to this stage. So this is what we call progress in efficiency terms.
We had to bring other coaches in to help us lock in a day.
It was like a utopia episode.
It really was. There was a large consultation process. And, you know, that can always be a little scary for a number of reasons. But So we've locked in November. So November is going to be the month where we have a real focus on coach wellbeing in particular. There'll be some stuff around some exercise, some meal planning, some mindfulness, all those sorts of things will be the focus of the month for November. Because of that, the month of October is where you're going to try and load you up with as much information on all of these topics as we possibly can. So that's the plan for us. So October, that's when you're going to get all the information. November, a little bit of a wellbeing challenge for everyone to go through. The hope being a little bit warmer, nicer weather. The morning walks have been a little bit cold the last week or so. So hopefully warmer weather, a little bit longer days, those sorts of things is going to be a better spot for everyone to be able to do something in the lead up into Christmas. Peter Lonergan normally does his coaches wellbeing challenge in January. So hopefully we can get like a good couple of months in there where coaches are really looking after themselves in particular. So that's the plan for us from a scheduling perspective. So if there is anything you'd want highlighted within that sort of, what are we going to call it, like a program or a push more than anything else? If there's anything you want in there, by all means, let us know. So if you want information on sleep or recipes or something like that, sure, we can give you something. Zoe can tell you how to cook a brisket.
Oh, yes. I just zoned out for a little bit and that brought me right back in.
Since you heard brisket.
Doesn't bode super well for the rest of the podcast, but we'll see how we go. But
there's people walking by the door.
I got distracted as well.
It looks like they're about trying to come in, so I just got distracted by that.
No, I get it. So if there is anything you'd like us to cover off on there, by all means, let us know, and we'll do as much as we can to try and get the right information to the right people in that sort of space as well. So as we alluded to at the top of the episode, we are looking at mid-season reviews. This is kind of the time of the year where everyone's fuses are just a little bit shorter, I find. Like, it's getting colder, darker continually. You've potentially been in your seat. Like, if you're in the VJBL space now, you've been in for, 8 months, give or take, by this stage. If you're in that senior space, you're probably around about halfway through your season now that you've got roughly the other half to go. And it is that sort of time of year where people's tensions are usually a little bit higher. What's maybe been promised at the start of the year has not been eventuating how you thought it might. And so, consequently, you're going to have to deal with some of those sorts of things. And, of course, it never hurts to have a little bit of a mid-season review with your team in particular. So, I mean, Zoe, we'll go to you first. Would you go with a team review session or would you have individual reviews?
I would go individual reviews because different players need different things and have different issues, as well as you often get in a team environment or a group environment, it's really the extroverts that dominate, and so the introverts will just sit there and you'll never hear what they want or need or what's going on in their head. So I always make sure that they're individual. And one of the things that's vital in these sort of situations is don't have them just rock up to practice and say, oh, we're doing reviews. Warn them. Give them a chance to think of some things. Even if you could come up with a little sort of question and answer just to prompt some thinking, and then go through that and obviously then give them an opportunity to add anything that might not be covered. But that then ensures you get something out of it. And an athlete might come in and say, no, I've got nothing to say. I'm all good. Great. But it just it means that you will definitely find out if there's anything bubbling away, because they'll feel more comfortable in a not in a group environment. But if you are doing this with underage athletes, there has to be a parent in the room or guardian in the room with you as well.
Yep. What about you, Nick? Would you go team or individual?
I'd actually, same thing, individual. Definitely agree with the parent needs to be present. They must be present. So, yeah, we definitely see coaches on occasion that pull a kid aside and sit down by themselves. You absolutely can't do that for those listening. When they're not really answering or they're like, oh, no, nothing's wrong, you got to try and be clever as well with these junior athletes to prompt some sort of conversation as well. Like things that I would ask is if we had or you felt like that was the best season ever, what would make it the best season ever? And then try and really manipulate the question to try and get some answers as well.
Yeah, I like the idea of sending them maybe a little Q&A type survey beforehand so that you've at least got some talking points when you come back into it. So whether you send it out, say, a week and a half before and it's like, look, schedule your times, whether it be before, after training, during training, if you've got an assistant coach available, you might send them to take the practice as you as the head coach go and do what you're thinking. You might flip it and go the other way and it's like, actually, the assistant coach is going to run these mid-season reviews. Here are the things I need you to touch on with each of these kids or players, whatever the case might be. Because there is also an element of fear, I think, that comes with any sort of review in that I don't want to say anything that's going to potentially impact my court time, my role or anything like that. So
or people, upset anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they may not always be honest with it. So I think that initial survey beforehand is a great launching pad for what can come next. And it is one of those areas where they're going to be a little bit uncomfortable. Some people will be quite okay with telling you face-to-face they don't like something. But there'll be plenty of others that are like, this is really uncomfortable. I want to write it down first because it takes the emotion out of it. And as a coach, you get to read it. You get to be prepared for what's coming when you walk back in.
Yeah, I think with having, for underage athletes, having the parent or guardian in the room, as Nick said, you have to do it.
Yep.
But I think it's important, coaches, that you make sure that they are aware that we've got to try and let the kids do the talking, even if they're young. Give them that opportunity first. And if you're getting nothing out of it and, you know, you can sort of speak to the parent there or, you know, in that time. But it's got to be the athlete. We've got to start having our athletes get comfortable with conversations with their coaches. And the earlier we can do that, the better. So, yeah, it's not an opportunity for a parent to come in and vent all their potential issues that they may have. This is an opportunity for the athlete to say what they want, because there are a lot of times too where the issues that the parents have don't actually align with the issues that the athlete has, and ultimately the athlete is the one that is the most important.
And you would hope too, I suppose, that parents would feel like there is not an open door policy, because that can be super dangerous if you just rip the hinges off that thing and just allow everyone that wants to have a chat to you to have a chat to you whenever they feel the urge. But you would hope that as parents, if there are problems or anything like that, they can communicate that with you over the course of the season, that you don't have to wait for a mid-season review. And it's the same with players. If you feel like something needs to be addressed, address it straight away. Don't wait for a certain point in time. It's amazing how problems that go away by themselves come back by themselves. And so the earlier you can be on the front foot with any potential issues, they'll go away quicker and you can actually come to a point where you can solve the problem. And that way you could use your mid-season check-in with, hey, this was an issue 2 months ago. Is it still a problem now? Have we addressed it? Can we move forward with whatever the case might be? But the areas in particular that I was sort of looking at, performance and progress, mindset and effort, team culture and communication, and goals and next steps, they're kind of the four main areas that I would be looking to really have a little bit of review with my my players on. When we talk performance and progress, Nick, what sort of questions would you be asking in that space? Like when you've got the player, you may have sent them the survey to begin with, but when we're talking performance and progress, what questions would you be asking to try and have a review with your players?
Oh, that's a good one. Performance and progress. I might pass to Zoe for a little bit. Give me a second to think about this one. That's actually a really good one.
I'd probably look at first
Am I the first person to do that, by the way?
No.
Well, as I say to my athletes, Nick, I don't know is a perfectly acceptable answer.
You're also put on the spot, to be completely fair. Like, you weren't given the show notes on the beforehand.
I'd say, first of all, asking what their goals are. So both from a skill set on court perspective and from a where they want to try and get to with their basketball.
And part of that's important because you've probably done some preseason work in this space in terms of goal. Like, what goals do you have over the course of the season? What are your short, medium, long?
Yep.
Where are we tracking on that in comparison to where we currently sit?
And that's where I'd link back to, would be making sure that we're on track with those sort of things. Identify if we're not, why, and then how we fix it and make the plan. But if you're going to make a plan, then you have to follow through with that plan. So it can't be, ball handling is an issue. We keep turning the ball over, and then you never give them the ball in a game or set them up in a drill at practice to actually practice that. You've got to put them in those positions. So it's a two-way street. The athlete needs to work on, you know, whatever the skill set is or for performance, but the coach has also got to foster that environment to allow them to do that. So that would probably be where I would start. I would ask them to rate how I would have in that little question answer survey thing, depending on the age, different sort of skill sets or different things. You know, it might be similar to our six pillars that we use, and get them to rate it out of. Now, I'm a bit of a jerk. I only allow athletes to rate out of four, because if you give them a middle number, they'll always take the middle number. So they're only allowed to rate out of four, which is, you know, four excellent, three above average, two below average, and one poor. So get them to rate how they're going, but then I'll also rate them too. And so then we'll see where we're at with, are we sort of similar in our thinking?
Yep.
Because that also then might answer some questions about performance, in terms of if there's some court time issues or not making teams, depending on the age, not making state teams or those sort of things. So then we can discuss those areas where we may be, you know, I may have put a four and you may have put a one and now we can talk about, why is this so different and go through all of that. So that's probably where I would start.
And there will always be some kids that sandbag on that thing. And it's like, oh, I'm going to say poor so that when I come into my performance review, so to speak, it's like, oh, no, I think you're doing really well, and they want to hear the positive feedback.
Like pre-season, start a pre-season beep test.
Around about
9.
5.1. Oh, okay, 9. Oh, okay, that's a lot higher than what I was thinking.
I had it when you got to write down how many minutes you were expected. There was always one kid that wrote 5.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
Yeah, you want more than 5 minutes. Yeah.
Can you show that to your parents, please?
Yeah, exactly. Can you sign right there and date it?
Yeah.
But I do find the number ranking system and like some text enables for both. So if you do have a player that's maybe not a good communicator, you at least get a little bit of a gauge for where they feel they're at. And that might still be a 1 through 10 type. Like, you know, where would you rank your free throw shooting? A 7. Well, you don't shoot 70%. So probably not going to be a 7. Let's slide it down a little bit. Those types of things. So I think there's a way of getting both, because kids do tend to sort of just go super quiet when they're talking about themselves. There aren't too many extrovert kids that I've sort of seen in these types of situations. But I mean, I think the open-ended questions are the ones you want. Just like, are you enjoying the season? Yep. Cool. Thanks. Like, what are you enjoying about this season? That makes such a massive difference, because now they have to think a little bit more about, well, okay, what am I enjoying? is there anything that I'm not enjoying? And I think that's a valuable part of it as well, is to give them the opportunity to voice any concerns they might have, or areas they're not comfortable with, or areas that aren't quite lining up with what they wanted. And the biggest thing is you have to really impress upon them there are no repercussions to this.
Well, I think to help with that early, especially if you don't make it up, but if you've seen there's been times where you've made an error, bring that up. You know, I've noticed in reflecting in preparation for this meeting, I've noticed that I may have been, a little hard on you in this area, or I've made a mistake on this. That vulnerability now shows the athlete, one, that you're not completely shut off to, you know, critique or that sort of stuff. You don't think you're right all the time.
And they're around you all the time. So if you're putting on a show, they know you're putting on a show. Yeah. They're just not telling you.
Exactly. Right? You've got to be yourself.
Correct.
Yeah. As a coach. Like, they'll, kids are phenomenal, and players in particular are great at seeing through the bluff. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they'll be enamored for a little while and think, oh, wow, how good is this coach? Then all of a sudden on week three where it's like, gee, what they say and what they do are not necessarily the same thing. They'll see through that.
Yeah,
well, and that's hard to come back from.
We see it all the time with, you know, there are coaches in our systems at the moment that, you know, are constantly talking about the players that they work with and that they've made and they've done this and they've done that. You don't hear the players talking about that coach. And so it's for that reason. They see through it. So being able to show that vulnerability is key to helping them open up for that, because, yeah. I mean, we're asking a 14, 15, 16-year-old to look an adult in the face and tell them what the problems are.
I don't like it when you gave me that feedback, whatever the case might be. But so I don't understand why it's hard.
It's hard, but we need to encourage it too.
I have an example of it, like being vulnerable, and I had a player. Oh, yeah, story time. Oh,
story time. Sorry, my bad. I was a little slow on the uptake there.
I go blank on the progression question, but I don't forget a story time, do I? Anyway, so I had a player, one of the games, or it was actually over a few weeks, but his minutes progressively got shorter, and I couldn't figure out why. In the end, he didn't play the entire second half. And before it got out of hand, I went to him and I said, hey, mate, just let your mum know. We're going to have a chat on Monday. I just want to sort this stuff out. And he goes, okay, cool. So he didn't bring it up. He didn't spark it. I went on the front foot to go, I'm going to get to this before it gets out of hand. Sat down with him and I go, look, mate, like, I need you on the floor as I need all the other players on the floor. What works for you? What are you comfortable in, so I can write it down? Because obviously the things that I've given you haven't worked. I'm not sure what it is now. So you tell me where you're comfortable. And the look of shock of, like, he was – and I probably should have – I haven't done the here's the questionnaire beforehand. I think that's a really good idea as well. But I hadn't done that. So he doesn't know what he's obviously walking into going, oh, this guy's going to tell me why I'm not playing. I'm looking forward to this 30
Shields
minutes.
Shields are up.
but this whole, like, shock look of, wait, you want me to tell you what I'm good at? Oh, you know, I'm good off the pick and roll. I can throw to the roller. I can do this. Okay, cool. Well, I'll put you in those positions. However – these things I'll need from you. Like, it's a bit of a transaction now. So it's, you know, it's a bit of give and take. But giving him that vulnerability of, like, I don't know why. What are you good at? Let's start with that and figure out if I've missed something here.
Yep. And I think that's part of it, is even just like a really leading question, where have you seen the most amount of personal growth this season? Like, what do you think you've actually improved on over the course of this season? And they might come way out of left field on this. Like, you might sit there and say, actually, they defended the pick and roll really well compared to where they started. And they'll sit there and say, oh, you know, I think I've done a pretty good job getting shots off a flare screen. It's like, geez, I have not noticed that at all as the coach. It's like, well, if that's what they're seeing and that's what they're validating their experience in, great. Maybe I need to look a little bit differently at this, and I'm not having it sort of come through on the same lens as that. But even... well, we've spoken a lot about the individual, but even just unpacking it a little bit from a team perspective, like, what's been our biggest success as a team this year? Like, when do you think we have played where we've just worked it out? Like, what's our best patch of basketball? And every kid will probably have something different, unless there's been like a little, you know, quarter somewhere where you've turned around like an 8-point deficit and you've come out of it up 4 or something like that.
Or like a massive upset.
Yeah, something like, along those lines. They'll all probably have a different moment where they've thought, you know, as a team, I really enjoy that. Some of it might be at training sessions. It doesn't necessarily have to be a game. They might just say, you know what, that Sunday morning where we trained in March, I felt like we all clicked. Like that was just a really good session. You look back and it's like, actually, yeah, I remember that one. And it did feel pretty good in that sort of space. So don't be scared to try and unpack the team stuff with the individual, because I think similar to what you were talking about before, Zoe, if you bring everyone in at the one time, voices can get, you know, missed in all of that. But I don't think it's a bad thing to have the individuals talk about the team aspect, because that's their voice. They get a chance to have a little bit of a say on what's going on, and that might be from their perspective, and their perspective might be very different to the other 9 players or whatever it is, but that's okay. As long as you know about it, I think that's a good spot to be in.
It could be as simple as, what are we good at defensively as a team? What are we good at offensively as a team? Get their answer. And then at the end, there might be like some common ground. Like even if it's 7 out of 10, that's quite similar. You know where you can head for the rest of the season, right?
Yeah, and even just role clarity. Like now is a good time to check in on role clarity. Like, do you know what your role is? Are you happy with your role?
Well, because the role may have changed as well. Yep. Like that's, you know, athletes with their improvement and their ability to, you know, if they do what you've asked and then they, or there may have been a role discussion, but to do this, this and this, that's how you'll improve your role or increase your role on the team. If they go and do that, well, then you need to have the discussion of your role's changed. Let's talk about that now, which is really cool.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. Well, that's what you want. If you have a player whose role was the same at the start of the season as it is at the end of the season, there has been limited growth there. That's the job, is to try and put them into a different position where they can perform something differently, preferably better, if they possibly can, than they were at the very start. Like, I think that's our job as coaches in that space. So the more insight you can get, and we're not asking players to, like, snitch on teammates or anything like that. Like, that's not what we're after. But there is an element of even ask, hey, who do you feel most comfortable playing with? Like, is there a lineup where you feel comfortable? And it might be, you know, I actually really like playing with the backup big because they set better screens for me coming off that on ball. So I feel like I can throw to them better. It's like, well, okay, that's actually really good to know that that works well for you.
I'd probably say that's a 16s and 18s type question,
yeah,
though.
I wouldn't ask the under 12s.
Because if you ask the 12s and 14s, they're going to say they're 3 best mates in the team. And because they probably don't have the depth of thinking.
Yeah, the comprehension's not quite there for them.
And if it's boys, it's surface level answers like intensity, communication.
Yeah. Resilience.
Like,
God, how often does it happen? And this is a little bit of a tangent, obviously, but how often do you get to the end of a training session and it's like, okay, what could we have worked on better? Communication.
Box out.
Okay, rebounds.
Well, by saying communication, you've already flagged that you can't communicate what communication was supposed to be. Give me specifics. Tell me exactly what, like, I really liked when we were talking about our stay-go call on baseline penetration. Okay, now we're talking communication. Mm-hmm. Rebounds. Rebounds will come up in every single post-game, post-training chat. With how often it comes up and how many missed box outs and offensive rebounds we give up, it astounds me. Because that should never happen if you're this aware of it. So what I would suggest has probably happened is there's been a case previously where they've said that answer, coach has gone, great answer. And they're like, hey, great answer.
This is my answer.
I'm leading
from
into
now
this for
on.
Everything. What makes coaches happy? Oh, communication and box outs. Well, this is what my answer is going to be all the way through from this. So
it's also because coach, all they hear when coaches talk is box outs.
Yeah. That's all they hear. They just hear box out every second word or whatever.
And sometimes it's a great box out. It's like, whoa, this is different. But it is that kind of thing where if there are any players listening, unpack your answer a little bit more. Mm. Like rather than the one word answer, roll out with a bit of a sentence on, I think this because.
Like, well, and that's when we're doing reflection at the end of a session and, you know, what are the points of emphasis? And there'll be, you know, on-ball screen coverage. And I'll go, great, give me a point. Like, you don't get to just say that. Like, give me a point. What's one of the things we have to do for that? You know, pick one of the coverages. What's one of the things you have to get done? And it does help answer it for the next 3 kids, because if they only do one point, then
they know what's coming.
They know the rest. But yeah, it's what we're not asking just to take time or anything like that. We're asking because we want to know that it's sunk in what we've been doing and that you understand. So show us that you understand rather than just give us those sort of not blank answers, but
the surface ones, right? Yeah. The ones, yeah. I think the coach wants to hear this word.
Yep. Not helpful. Mm. And look, to be honest, one of the biggest things, are you enjoying the season? Like, and find out if they are, because this is the time for them to also say, actually, no, I'm not, for whatever reason. You know, I don't like my role, or I think I could be used differently. And sometimes you can, and sometimes, to be fair, you can't. And it's like, well, look, I don't envisage your role changing until this changes first. Mm. And once that's done, well, then, yeah, maybe we can.
But this is how I'm going to help you, but you need to meet me halfway on this, similar to what you were saying, Nick. Like, it's a transaction now. Yeah. I'll do these things, but you need to do X, Y, and Z. But you might even get the athlete say, you know, are you enjoying the season? No. Why aren't you enjoying it? I don't like basketball. And now it's a case of,
geez, that's tough in a mid-season review. You're halfway through.
Yeah.
But that gives you the opportunity to open up. With, okay, what don't you like? Mm. Like, is there external pressure? Is there internal pressure? Is it the way you're being coached? Is there something that we can change that we can now look to address? Because, and look, I've had it. I had a player once that said, I don't like it when you stand up and coach. It's like, well, how else do you want me to coach?
Stiff.
And they're like, well, and to be fair, they're like, I'd like you to coach sitting down. I find it intimidating when you walk the sidelines and you yell and all that sort of stuff. It's like, well, look, we play in a stadium with four courts going. I have to yell, like, listen to the message, not the tone, which we've all said as coaches, and sometimes the tone
is that where majority rules? Did the other nine okay with it? Or
nine didn't say anything about it. I did say, okay, I'd give it a crack, and I think I lasted 3 minutes. And it's like, nope,
because
this is not for me.
Not possible.
No,
right?
It's just not comfortable for me. So it's like, well, look, okay, I've heard you. I get it. I get where you're coming from. Do I need to maybe change some other things that will make it possible for me to stand up and coach, but you not feel intimidated? Okay, we can do that. But until you ask the question, you don't know. And the biggest thing is, don't take it personally.
So what did you change? Like, how did you do that? Did you just not, when you had to address that kid while he was on the court, did you sit down or what did you do?
No, it was she.
Oh, she.
And sorry. I'd bring them to me. Yep. So rather than yelling across the court of, hey, we need this, this and this, hey, come over here, I'll stand next to you and talk. And it was very stand next to.
And so did you let her know that?
Yeah, yeah.
Before this was going to happen.
It's like, look, I'll try and sit down for a game, but zero promises. And as it turns
out, poor execution.
Yeah, exactly. To be fair, they were coming off the bench anyway, so they already figured out, hey, this is not going to work. So it was always a case of, I'd bring them to me. We'd both look at the game, in a sense. So if there were like free throws or something like that, we'd both watch the free throws, but have that chat next to them, so it's not intimidating for them. And just that way, I didn't have to yell. I could change my tone of voice. I could change my delivery. They got the opportunity to ask questions of me, so it wasn't a case of them being spoken at, they were being spoken with. And so that was the change and the negotiation I sort of had to make in that one, where kind of went away from what I've done previously, but it was a better outcome. Like, if they were more comfortable with it, and I mean, the other nine players, they got spoken to as they normally would. Like, they didn't flag that there was a problem, so in which case, if you don't say anything, I'm just going to assume we're all good.
Well, I had a similar in a mid-season review with an athlete that was like, you talk to me too quickly after I come off. Like, you, fair enough. I on reflection, I did. Like, they'd sit down and I'd be like, hey, X, Y, Z, blah, 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 and then walk off. And she's like, I'm not hearing it because I'm either exhausted or annoyed or whatever. And it was actually some of the best advice because even just whether they're just coming out for a rotation or whatever, allowing them the chance to now sit, take a breath, take a, you know, a sip of water and then go and talk to them has changed everything. And not just with her, with all the athletes that I've dealt with in a game.
Well, you think about athletes though, anytime they have a coach interaction, because as coaches we tend to coach teams rather than individuals. Like, that's probably our core focus, is to try and get the team to where the team wants to go. And yes, we'll do some coaching of individuals within that. For a lot of people, a one-on-one chat, whether it be feedback, communication, question and answer, can put them into fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
Straight away, it either escalates tension of, what are they talking to me about? Is this going to be bad? Is this going to be... And they don't know what's coming. So they just shut down. And they're not in a position where they can actually hear and understand. But by giving them that second to just take a breath, it's like, okay, now I can gather my thoughts. Like, how many players are ever happy that they've been subbed out of a game?
Mm.
Like there are very few, unless they've called for the number and it's like, hey, I need one here. They're not usually happy coming off. And if they're coming out after they've missed a shot, made a turnover, they're like, oh, I'm only coming off because I missed a shot. It's like, it's got nothing to do with that. That sub was called before you'd missed that shot. Don't stress about that. But they're not thinking that. They're thinking, I'm coming off the court. I must have done something wrong. I'm about to wear one. And it's like, no, not the case. Like, there's some feedback coming. But how it's delivered kind of matters. And I think that gap between like task, outcome, and then feedback, the longer that can be contextually, like obviously you don't wait half an hour, but you know, the space in between I think is really valuable.
Well, and I think when how the process then what that became for me was I'd call for the sub. If it was a really tight game and I knew I wouldn't have time to go and deliver the feedback, I'd turn to my assistant, which was often you, Rob, and say, hey, talk to her about this, this and this. But if she was – any time they came out, if they were coming out because it was simply a rotation, or I'd be like, hey, it's just a blow. Like, it's – you just need a second. Like, and they'd be like, oh, okay. Like, you're not in trouble. Or this just helps us with our rotations.
But what, with mid-season reviews, because this is a really common question, I reckon I've got it every year. How do I get more minutes? This always happens halfway through the year. And I reckon every coach that coaches on a Friday night is asking it right now, listening to this podcast, like, what do we say? How do we deal with it?
Yeah.
And don't lie. Yeah, the biggest thing. Like 100%. If there is no way, like you might be in a team, and look, we'll go to the pointy end of this just for relevance. You might be the backup point guard to the starting point guard for the national team in that team. And they're like, I want more minutes. It's like, I hear what you're saying. You're going to have to learn to play off the ball then. Because at the moment, the best point guard in the country is taking up that starting point guard spot and you're their backup. They're getting the lion's share of the minutes here because you're obviously dealing with like a VC level team and higher, that sort of stuff. So, okay, unless you can guard the two and unless you can stick the open jumper, I don't see where those minutes come from. But we can set a plan for this on the way forward as to how this is going to work. Now, if you're at the other end of the scale where you might be dealing with domestic kids and that's where this has come from, and if you're doing mid-season reviews with your domestic kids, power to you. Like, good on you for doing that. Like,
did you ever do them when you were?
Once, but I pretty much had a rep team playing domestic anyway. So it was slightly different. Same. Yeah. So if that's the case and they want more minutes and all that sort of stuff, well, okay, here's, again, what I need you to do. It's not never. Like, it's just not right now, and we need to put a plan in place, but you need to be held accountable to that. And when I say you need to be held, not necessarily the player, the coach as well. Don't promise something you can't deliver. If you're going to say, hey, I'll get you more minutes if you do this, this, and this, and then they do it and you don't give them more minutes, there's going to be conflict. So you're right, because this time of year is very much, why am I playing as much? And we get this a lot because they've potentially had 8 months of the same role with no light at the end of the tunnel.
And they believe like they're learning a lesson of, wait, I've worked really, really hard, but my minutes have stayed the same. I'm supposed to get results because that's what's been but it doesn't, life doesn't work that way, right?
No, exactly. Input does not always equal output.
Correct, yeah.
So you do have to be really careful that you're not going to promise something to them that you can't deliver on. And I can't stress that enough. And that's for a variety of things, not just court time. But I think the court time one in particular, there are some games that we all circle on our calendar and it's like, hey, we know what? We can probably turn up half asleep and we think we're going to win this one. Or I don't see any way in which we win this game. As you're walking into it, like it's just like we know it. Like there are some games that you just circle on the calendar. It's like, oh, that's not it. But you do have to be really careful as the coach that if you are in one of those games where you're on the wrong end of it and you just go, oh, stuff this, I'm just going to put all my bench out there. You're not exactly setting your bench up for a lot of success there. They'll be feeling like I never get to play when it's good, but I have to play when it's really bad. That's not a good way to go forward as well. So you do have to be really mindful. And I'm not a big one for, like pre-planned subbing. Like it doesn't suit me, to be honest. I need to coach probably on the fly and going off gut and feel and those types of things. But you do have to be a little bit careful that you're not just going to throw the bench to the wolves and say, oh, look, we're already down. So you know,
we had that with a coach at SCC when I was floating around with the country coaches.
Yep.
Where she was doing stats and minutes and she's like, oh, I've got to track this to make sure everyone gets it. And I go, whoa, whoa. And they go, well, we have to do even minutes. And I go, yeah, within reason. Like, I don't think it has to be to the second. I go, get rid of that and start coaching them. She's like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I was like, so if you are tracking it, yeah, it's hard to coach when you're focused so much on this template you've created on subbing.
And it comes from the right place.
Yeah.
I'm trying to give everyone an opportunity, but the actual application of it, well, that's harder again. So the next area I had was team culture and communication. So we've spoken a little bit about ask the player about what does the culture feel like? Do you enjoy coming to this? That's a big part of it. You know, is there a way that we can bring the group more together? And that's a big part because everyone will have different opinions of it. Whether we are aware of it or not, there will be little cliques that form within every team. And that might be as simple as, three of those kids go to school together, so they see each other all the time. Then they come to basketball, and of course they communicate with those kids more because they see those ones all the time.
Well, they just like each other more.
They just like each other more. Mm. And like, there's
that's
nothing
okay
wrong with
as
that.
Well. Yeah. And that's the thing. That I think that's something that bothers me so much at the moment is that everyone's got to be equally friends with everyone. Mm. That's not, again, that's not how life works. So why would we set this up like that? As long as you know, groups, as you said, little groups will form as long as they're not detrimental or causing harm to anybody else in the group. I don't see it as an issue.
Yep. You don't have to like everyone. You just have to function with them.
Yeah. But coming up now is a really, especially if you're a VJBL coach, is a really good time to help with something like that as you lead into the King's birthday.
Points for getting that right.
Thank you. I never get that right.
No, I could see the stress on your face as you were trying to get it.
Thank you. But, you know, your midweek session, instead of training, go do something because you don't have the game on the Friday. So, you know.
Or even over that weekend. Like between games, go and do something.
Oh, no, let the families go away and do something.
Well, no, if they're playing. My point is if they're playing, you're potentially going to have hours in between games. Go and do something as a team. To just
cold pool or something, recovery, go recover together.
Yep.
But if you're not in a tournament or something like that, go do something fun. Go bowling. Go or something that.
I thought you said fun. I remember bowling fans out there are about to be emailing in.
But something that you know, people often the majority aren't good at, so they're all bad at it, and they can all look silly in front of each other and have a laugh and you know, maybe bring down some of those barriers a little bit.
I did something like that. Instead of doing the Dandenong Eltham tournament, I chose not to do it. And instead I ran a little short day camp where it was like 2 hours and then there was a bit of recovery, 2 hours in recovery. And it was the dry therapy with the seats.
Yep. Yep.
So they all got in the seats and then I got the owner to just go, hey, put the NBA on. And the parents sat downstairs and they could go because there's all the parents down there anyway and they're all upstairs and the cameras are on them. And the kids just hung out. Well, and it was the best thing I did. Like the training was irrelevant. Yes. Like it was, maybe we got more comfortable in our stuff, possibly. But the big thing was that they were sitting upstairs in their groups. Like I'm with you guys on this. Like who cares? You know what I mean? Like you just have
when
to.
When it becomes a problem.
Just coexist,
you know, where there's a group
right?
that's being mean to, or, you know, that's absolutely unacceptable.
Yep.
But I mean, we talk about it a lot. Like if we were in the same team, the three of us here, well, of course I'm going to spend more time with Rob. Like, of course.
Oh, unfortunate. Like,
you know, but
what?
But like, it's crazy.
She provides briskets.
it is. I think it's, I don't think we have to break down every, as long as people aren't being excluded from the whole group.
Yep.
I think.
And understand well, everyone is different.
But those things do happen, right? And
they
does get brought up in your mid-season review.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how do you address the fact that, hey, you just have to coexist. You don't have to sing around a campfire like all the time, right? Like,
no, well, it's exactly
lack
right.
of a better term, yeah.
And, I mean, you can only deal with who's in front of you because the last thing you want to do is start talking about another player with the player in front of you. I think that's a really dangerous door to open. So I would obviously recommend don't do it. Now, even if a player brings up another player and says, this player is continually mean to me, or whatever the case might be, or I just don't gel with them. Okay, fine. What are the steps that you've taken in that space? Like, have you tried anything to try and mend this or get this to a good place and fight? And just unpack it a little bit. It's not a bad thing. You're not saying that everyone's going to be, not everyone has to love everyone. Like, it is okay to to have people that you prefer to be with in your team or people you just click with. Like there was, and it only happened last Saturday. So Zoe had her MPP and SPP session.
Is that story time?
Yeah, okay.
Sounds like
why
it.
Not? So
we need to put you in charge of the
buttons. Yeah, I was going to say,
buttons.
Like, look at the upgrade that you're about
not
to.
Not since my brain freeze before, but anyway. Yeah.
So we had the session. So there was a couple of, a few of the girls that had come in early to get a workout in before the actual session started. So that would have finished at around about 10:30 or so, and gradually everyone else started walking in. I'm just sort of sitting there, and it's like there's a whole court here not being used, and everyone is just sitting around talking about what's been going on. And there was part of me that it was just itching in the back of my head. It's like, would one of you just get up and start shooting and do something? Like, you can still have these chats whilst you're shooting around, and it's like, and, you know, I'm sort of fighting the urge to sort of say, hey, how about it? Like, we don't shoot that well from the free throw line. Do you reckon we could maybe just go and get a couple of those up before we start this session? And Zoe made the point. She's like, look, some of these kids don't see each other on the weekly. For some of these players, they haven't seen each other for a month. The only time they get to interact is virtually via text messages and things like that. So this is actually really valuable time for them to be able to connect and do it. Now, would I like them to do it differently? Yes, but that's cranky Rob. You know, that's, you know, it's a different version of me.
So it's a chocolate eggs all over again, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Like, I'm not sure if you can see my left eye twitching at the moment, but it's twitching. Like, just thinking back to that. But it is that kind of thing where you do need to put some time in there to allow players to be players and to form those connections with other people. Now, do you have to like everyone, like we've said? No, you don't. But you do have to find a way to work with them. And sometimes that can be difficult depending on who delivers what message. And love our kids to death when they want to be leaders and all that sort of stuff, when they want to do something which requires some direction on their behalf. Sometimes kids, because they're kids, can deliver it really poorly. They don't realise, one, how to take it if they're on the receiving end, but two, how to deliver it so that it doesn't cause offence. Mm. And sometimes, and look, we hear it all the time, it's like, you know, I'm not mean, I just tell the truth. It's like, yeah, okay, but there's different ways to tell the truth. Like, you don't have to be a jerk about it. Like, there are ways that you can package that differently so that it hits the right way and they don't take offence because you haven't caused the offence.
Sometimes they just like their own space before entering a Absolutely. Team environment. I had a player that was like that where I kept making him go into the group, and then he, on the feedback in the mid-season review, he's like, I like just my own time a little bit before the game, and then I'll come in and I'll listen to you after that. But if you don't bring me into – like, it was a really honest conversation. Yeah. I'm like, yep. Yeah, I'll try it. Mm. And then I tried it, and he significantly improved. I've done nothing for his basketball in terms of – like, just as in just taking that part alone and just let him be himself. It's not like he doesn't like the group. He just likes his own space first and, you know.
I think it's a valuable part of it in that, you know, you don't always understand the group dynamics. Yeah. Like, it's sometimes there's been something that goes on that causes them to like each other more or less or whatever the case might be. You're not necessarily there to be the problem solver. Now, if it starts to impact on court performance, then yes, you may need to intervene. But I would strongly suggest leave them alone.
But also, I would say tap into your eyes and ears that you've got available to you. So if an athlete brings up in their review that something's happening, don't just go the throat of whoever they've, you know, because that's also a problem. Talk to your team manager because they'll see and hear so much more than what you do. Yep. Get if you've got lucky enough to have an assistant coach, get them to keep specific eyes on those athletes, especially when they're together.
Well, they're sitting there usually in a game. You're up coaching and the assistant coach is sitting right there. They're hearing what goes on the bench.
Yeah.
And so many times that can be misconstrued.
I feel it's more the team manager that picks up on that stuff just because the assistant sometimes is in and out, bench and court.
Yep.
The team manager is usually the mum or dad and they're just sitting there watching. So they're usually the best.
It's also why you need a good team manager.
100%.
You need the one that's not coming in with a bias or a vested interest to promote their child.
But gather your data first before you decide to do anything because, you know, obviously the athletes brought it up, which is great because you don't want them just staying silent. But you need something other than their word to go off of. So get trusted people and hopefully your team manager is trustworthy and your assistant coach is trustworthy and get them to help you because you can't spend your games listening – trying to listen for what may be happening. That's too much. So,
it means a culture piece. as well with your players, in that you do want a good functioning culture within your team. And look, the last team I coached, we had some cliques within the group, but they weren't dangerous cliques. Like, they were just people that have played together before, or new people, which obviously just connected together really quickly. But there were also two key cogs that I knew I couldn't lose over the course of the year, because they were also the ones that, whilst they had their own groups within that, they were kind of the bridging gap between different groups as well. Like, they had their core two or three people they really liked, but they were still nice and friendly and all that sort of stuff with the other group. So for mine, I didn't need to get a temperature check on every one of the 10 players. I needed to find out how those two in particular were going with everything. And if they were all of a sudden really short, or were freezing someone out or something like that, it's like, okay, something's happened. Like, now I need to check in with those two in particular, and then I can unpack it from there if I need to. But I was also really aware it's not my job to solve social problems. I'm their coach. Like, I'm not going to sit there and say, you know, I need to interject into your personal life, because that's where we have to draw the line as well.
But you spoke about building culture. I think that's really important. You, first of all, you need to do it straight away. Yep. At the start of the year. Yep. For your mid-season review to be effective. The second thing is, you can't do it for the first 3 weeks and go, all right, I'll do.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people just burn out and just go, oh, it was exciting. But now it needs to be something that you can maintain and be consistent.
Yep. And that might be something that goes into your mid-season review. Like, what can we do as a team to bring everyone together? What can we do as a team to lift each other up? What can we do as a team to build cohesiveness? And they might have some, you know, they might want to go bowling. Like, that might be a suggestion that they throw out there as well. We might all go to a senior game together. No worries. Like, if that's what we want to do, that's fine. Because this is also part of the year where, whether we like it or not, training attendance drops off fairly heavily in the winter months. And I get it. Like, a variety of reasons why that would happen. Not least of which is probably football. Like, that tends to be played on the same day that our training sessions are. So, consequently, that impacts down the line. So, you know, is there a way in which, you know, two or three of the kids all play in the same footy team as well? Can we have this training off because it falls right in the middle of our training session anyway? Can we go watch them play footy or something like that? Like, that might be the change that you look to making. But trying to get players at a training session this time of year is difficult. You know, cold and flu, late nights, cold mornings, those sorts of things. It's difficult. But that's also when tensions arise. So, where, again, we come back to the court time thing. There will be parents of kids that are at every training session that don't see their minutes necessarily go up, even though they're at everything. But kids that aren't attending expect the same amount of court time. And that is a difficult spot to be in for a coach, where you're trying to keep everyone happy, because parents will have opinions on what it should be. Your club will probably have an opinion on what that should be. Then you will have an opinion on what that should be, where as a coach, you're trying to develop everyone, but you're also trying to win some games in there in between. And as much as winning is not the only thing, we're all competitive people. People like to win. If there's an opportunity to win a game, they're probably going to try and win the game. So whatever your rules are and your expectations, make sure that that is flagged at the start of the season, so that when you hit this point, this isn't a surprise to everyone. Because, and we've all been in this situation where, and we're rocking into a training session on a Sunday morning, and I knew that there would be two or three kids missing because I knew there was a clash coming. But then we have two kids. And it's like, well, what am I supposed to do with two kids at 8 a.m.? Like, I could have had this morning off myself. Like, so it ends up being an individual session. Like, are there different things you could do? Like, rather than doing a 90-minute session on a Sunday morning, could you break it up and it's like, hey, you three are going to be in for 30 minutes, then you three are going to be in for 30 minutes, then you three are going to be in for 30 minutes. We're going to do some small group work. We're going to really like drill into your shot technique and see if we can fix some things along the way or get you on a better path. So I think there are things you can do. You've just got to be a little bit creative with it and make sure that all the cards are on the table at the very start of the year, because this is a difficult time. It's not unusual for people to sign up in October and then not realize how hard it can be in like May, June.
Yeah, and I think with the low numbers, whatever you decide, just make it apparent to them at the start of the year. Like when we would have the parent induction meetings and stuff at Casey, they would talk about low numbers is what we're going to do. You're still expected to be at training. This is what we're going to be running. So they had a really clear understanding whether it's right or wrong. So I think the unknown part is where parents and mid-season reviews go a little bit areas like, you didn't say that. And that's where coaches get
caught
out.
From?
Yeah, so just be honest and clear and know the things that are going to come up most of you, if you've coached two or three seasons, you know the questions that are going to come up in the mid-season.
Yeah, and you know roughly when the problems are going to start arising. Correct. Like you can almost set your clock to it. It's like, okay, we've hit round six. What usually happens at about round six? Okay, footy started. Excellent. Okay, and we've normally got an injury coming around about now. Yep, there's that. Okay, and it just compounds.
Well, and you know your team probably better than anybody, so you'll know who's likely to ask about things like minutes, etc. So you can go in armed. If you've filmed games, you can go in with tape to be able to say, hey, like we know our athletes are, you know, great at visual learning. So if you can put together something, only, you know, two or three clips of, hey, this is when these are the things we've spoken about that we need improvement on. Here's some things that you've done really well that I'm really happy with. And then now all of a sudden it's, oh, okay, so because one of the things that kids think when you don't play them is that you don't care, like you don't care about them. Whereas if they can see that, it's like, oh, they actually do care and are trying to help me, you know. And then, so you're more likely to get some buy-in to what you're trying to do and the changes you're trying to make. But, yeah, you know, the kid that's playing the majority of the minutes isn't going to walk into your set. You know they're not going to walk in and say, you know, I'm not playing enough. But you know the kid that's probably...
They also won't say, play me less.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, again, you can... If you've sent out that sheet and you've got them back, you can start and see the areas that they're going to want to talk about, and you can take that, use that to arm yourself as you go into those meetings.
I think coming out of those mid-season reviews as well is just a little bit of goal setting. Okay, what's our focus for the next, you know, 6 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever the case might be? But I'd always follow it up with just some written dot points as well. Hey, here's what we discussed. This is what it was. This is the action moving forward. So that way there's something relatable again, so that when you get to the end of season review that you might be looking to do with your players, okay, here's what we had at the start. Here's what we had at the mid. Here's what we had at the end. We've seen improvement in these areas. We haven't necessarily seen the growth what we were hoping for in this. Can we put something in place for you for next season moving forward? But I think it just puts a lid on it so that there's no confusion coming out of it, because there are so many times, and look, we're in meetings continually as part of being a coach or being an adult that works and those sorts of things, where you walk out of a meeting and your recollection of what happened is different to what someone else's recollection is. Like, it just, they may have hit a point that wasn't relevant to you, so you've tuned that one out, or whatever the case might be. So I think that follow-up at the end to just put a little bit of a lid on it is a really easy way to be, and it's good for the parents to be able to see that as well. It's like, hey, here's what was discussed. Here's what we're looking at moving forward.
If you want a template on how to put that together, I think it was Dom Lenossier who has the start, stop, keep going.
Yep.
Where you just start doing this, stop doing this, keep going with this, and you can reframe the wording.
Yep.
But he just had the three dot points and that was it. That was the feedback, and that was really simple way to give feedback to players that they can just almost have a handheld thing for them as well.
Well, even you can simplify it even further. Like a little more of this, little less of this. Yeah. Well, that might be enough in most cases. Like that's not too hard for most people. They can usually find a couple of dot points in there. So that's what I would certainly be recommending for coaches. So if you are looking to do mid-season reviews, which are probably coming up over the next couple of weeks for most people, that's kind of the path we would be taking in all that sort of stuff. I think it's good for morale more than anything else, that the players feel like they have a voice and they're not just being told what to do and how to do things. There's actually a little bit of two-way communication in that. And one of the questions I'd always have on the what can I do better as a coach, like be vulnerable enough to sort of put your life in the hands of your players, which can be a bit of a dangerous place at times, but it's be prepared for the feedback. It's not always going to be good. More often than not, it tends to be, because people don't want to annoy you as the coach. But
how nervous, like I've done that as well, yep. And how nervous are the players?
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Like, this is a trick. I'm like, yeah, he's going to make me run. Yeah. Nah, you're the best. No, I seriously want feedback. Like, yeah. It's okay.
Well, to be honest, believe it or not, that's actually the question I go to the most.
Mm.
Like, when I'm looking through the questionnaire that we've sent them out prior to, that's the first question I go to is, what can I do better?
Because
if their response is, I think you're too negative, it's going to probably change the lens in which I look at all their answers in. Because they're going to have skewed that to not be quite so negative, because they don't want it to be that way in the first place. So you do just have to be really mindful that your players will know what you're about in that space.
I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment is smells of rich mahogany.
Been a little while since we've had a book club.
Now that's an intro.
I don't think I've been on.
No, you probably haven't.
That was nice. We should have that in the background while we're talking the whole time.
No. That's a level of class that we are not. So the book club this week is Essentialism by Greg McKeown. So essentially it is working out what's important and what can you actually remove from your life that will make life a little bit easier for you in particular. And there's that whole power of saying no to things. And like there's a book that you're about to start reading by Jefferson Fisher about the next conversation, Zoe. Like
it's, the pressure.
Yeah, I know. We'll be checking in 2 weeks for your book club review.
You know it takes me at least 12 months.
So,
if at all.
In particular, there's some great shorts with him.
Short.
Yeah. I'm the absolute epitome of buys a book to never read it.
Yeah. Like, hang on, Rob's trying to finish it.
It's okay. We'll come back to Zoe's shortcomings later. It's fine. But this is more about like how to have less clutter, I suppose, in your life more than anything else. So the ability to say no to things that don't really matter. Like it's as coaches, and I'll say this as a general rule, we tend to say yes more than we say no. Like if we're coaching a season, we've said yes at some point. So we tend to be aware of, look, there are going to be some things that come with that, whether that be late night games, late night training sessions, individuals that might come with it. You got to try and work out what actually matters to you in that role and how you say no. And the Jefferson Fisher clip that I'm trying to think of that I didn't actually grab for this show, we might do it a little bit later when we do that book review, is it's along the lines of someone says, hey, would you like to come to something? Oh, yeah, I'd like to, but. And it's like, yeah, as soon as they hear but, everything before it doesn't matter. And even maybe, like the word maybe, oh, yeah, I might be able to make it or maybe I'll get there. Gives false hope to something that was never going to happen in the first place. You're better off just saying no straight off the bat because it gives them a very clear indication and it gives you an out. Oh, maybe if my schedule opens up, I'll be able to make there. Still gives them hope that, oh, okay, maybe they're going to come to this thing when you have no intention of going to it in the first place. So it really is about mastering the art of what's important to you. Like how do you say no to things? How do you get to a point where conflict will come from overcommitting to things? So making sure you're keeping yourself in a position where you're not overcommitted or you're not overstretched so that you're burning the candle at both ends, making sure that you still have time to live a life and that you're actually let's set aside some scheduling time to think. Like I know we were talking about it yesterday, Nick, like the early morning walk is brilliant because no one's trying to catch you. You can actually think about what's going on and you don't have someone blowing up your phone or your email and those sorts of things. It's about protecting the asset and you are the asset. Like it's making sure that you have time because as a burned out person, you can't lead people and you can't help people. You're no value in that sort of space. So the bit I liked about it is it's really clear and easy and it gives a lot of references. And I'm one of those people that likes to hear things almost in story format, I guess, for lack of a better term. Like I need it related to something and it's like, oh, okay, I've been in that situation. But you know, you've got to be mindful that you know trade-offs are going to be inevitable. Like sometimes you'll have to say yes to something which will free you up some time later and sometimes you'll have to say no to something. But it's a bit of a case of less is better. And I think with our training sessions and our lives in particular, sometimes just freeing up some time can be so empowering as a person that now we have a clear window. Like I know Zoe and I lined up a Sunday where it's like, she doesn't have any training on. I'm not presenting a course that day. We've both got a Sunday off. Like, this is wild. This never happens. Then we both got sick on the same day. It was like a real cool Sunday.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of thing of just making sure that you do have balance within your life in particular because we can lose that, I think, as coaches over the course when we're trying to do everything for everyone all the time, that all of a sudden balance goes out the window. And when you're not balanced as a person, that's when fatigue happens. You know, you're short with people. Those types of things. Your quality of work goes down because you just can't be everything to everyone all the time. So Essentialism, I would recommend having a little bit of a read of it. You can probably find something with some key takeaways from it online as well. But I would certainly recommend having a little bit of a read of that one for anyone that's looking for something.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So the Not happy with that one?
No, I like Homer gets me every time. Cracks me up.
Okay. We've got to start ranking our intro grabs.
Should rank them. Yeah.
Yeah. I know which one's coming up top for me.
I know who I'm going with.
Yeah. Easily. So the social clip this week is from Simon Sinek. And any chance you get to have a look at what Simon does in particular, author of the book Leaders Eat Last, that was a really great lead. But this is one from him this week.
We don't build trust by offering help. We build trust by asking for it. I'm sure everyone in this room has had this experience where someone was in pain, didn't call you for fear of bothering you or interrupting you, and then you find out once they're okay. A friend of mine went through something, and I'm like, haven't talked in a couple weeks. And he sort of like slowly started to say, I've been struggling. And I said, why didn't you call me? He says, I didn't want to bother you. And my immediate reaction was, how dare you be so selfish to deny me the honor of being there for you? The way to prove that those things matter. Has anybody ever done that for you?
Very empowering music, of course, over the top, which very punchy. But it is a big part of, again, what we go through as coaches, is that a lot of times there are coaches that need help that don't ask for it. And there are people in, whether it be director of coaching roles, coaching coordinators, age group head coaches, just a general person around the club that likes coaching, that are more than happy to help out, and it will help you build connection, and it will help you build trust and care if you just ask for help. And there are so many people that, oh, I don't want to be the burden. I don't want to be, you know, the person that will never ask for help. Why are you eyeballing me at the moment?
You're talking. I'm looking at you because you're talking.
Suspicious. But it is one of those things where you do need to ask for help when you need help. And if that's as simple as, hey, can you watch my game? Bear in mind, they might have read Essentialism. They might say no. So you do have to be a little bit careful there. But, you know, if it's as simple as, you know, can I just have a chat to you about this drill or what I'm doing with this? Can you give me some feedback on it? That will actually build a connection with someone that is more likely to check in with you down the road. And there was another Simon Sinek clip where effectively 8 minutes is all it takes with someone. Like if you are doing it a little bit tough in whatever capacity, that might be, you've lost the game, that might be you're struggling in personal life, whatever the case might be. 8 minutes with someone that you trust can be enough to put you back on the right path. And it's like, well, if that's all it takes, why don't we use that 8 minutes more proactively rather than the whole, hey, how you going? It's like, oh, this is just wasted time. Like, ask some questions that are actually going to get you to a certain point, I think, in particular. But like 8 minutes is nothing to build trust and get help in that coaching space. So I think for mine, you sort of got two book clubs in the one for that one, because Leaders Eat Last is a great read from Simon Sinek as well. But the ability, I think, for coaches to actually ask for help is one that we probably don't do enough.
The Friday night phone call, right? Like that's where it starts. You know, the drive home.
Yep.
I've had many conversations where, you know, you lose by a point, you're out of the season's finished. And I go, all right, I'm going to call these three coaches, and whoever answers first, I'm just going to unload. And then they just go, talk to me, what happened? They know exactly why I'm calling because they know which game,
You start to go to private numbers, I've noticed, when you call people.
I do, yeah.
They start to screen you out a little bit.
Nobody seems to answer.
I just call Rob on his work number because he has to answer it.
We're working on that one. I've started to divert all my work calls to Nick's mobile, so it's just this never-ending loop.
That's why it's always engaged.
Continually coming back. But it is. It's something. Like, there is some comfort in the shared trauma, for lack of a better term, of going through coaching. And even when it's gone well, there are times where you want to talk to people about when it's gone well. It's like, this is what it feels like when it's gone well. Like, it actually worked and, you know, everything happened as it was supposed to happen. But it is that ability to literally build connections with people and ask for help. And I think that ties into the mid-season reviews. You having a mid-season review with your players is you asking them for help. What can you have? What transactional interaction can you have between the two that can help build a better relationship, player, team coming at the other end of it? So I think it's a valuable one.
I think the week after the mid-season review, it's always so good, isn't it? Because everyone's fired up again a little bit and they're up and about again. It's the best. It's my favourite part of the year.
Until you you hold them accountable for something that they said in the mid-season review and they're like, oh, that's what this feels like? Yeah. Like, you haven't told me about this now?
Can we go
the
back?
Reality hits.
Exactly right. So that's it for us this week, coaches. So thank you all very much for tuning in on this one, and we will catch everyone on the pod again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.